And welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged Podcast. This is a podcast that is committed to bringing to you the most interesting, inspirational, and informative people on the planet, and today will be no exception. In fact, I'm going to be talking to someone who was born a peasant, the son of a beggar, but in time he came to be called a counter-revolutionary. He experienced the indignities of imprisonment under Chinese communism. He eventually escaped to the United States, and he founded a nonprofit organization called China Aid. He has now met with some of the most powerful people on the planet, including the leader of the free world. He's inspirational in that he has given his life to rescuing people from religious persecution. And he's informative in that he not only knows a great deal about what is going on in the world of politics, but he's intimately acquainted with the problem of Christian persecution. And so today, I want to feature someone who is a pastor, a human rights, religious liberties activist, someone who was born in mainland China and was a student leader during the Tiananmen Square demonstrations for freedom and democracy back in 1989. I'm talking about Bob Fu, and delighted, Bob, to have you on Hank Unplugged.
Oh, thank you, Hank. It's an honor to be with you.
I just noticed that you were the winner of the 2020 Wilberforce Award from the Colson Center, and that's an incredible honor.
It is. It's very humbling to receive this, named after my great hero, you know, William Wilberforce, right? And I was really deeply humbled. And of course, in terms of China's freedom, religious freedom, there's a long way to go. So William Wilberforce's spirit, you know, is carried by the Colson Center that will continue to inspire us to continue our fight.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that we are doing this podcast on the anniversary of the Communist Chinese Party's foundation back in July 1, 1921.
Correct. 100 years birthday of this very evil Chinese Communist Party's ruling. They marked with the Communist Party leader Xi Jinping's, you know, that Tiananmen Square big show talk, and proclaiming anybody who messed up with the Communist Party of China, they will be met with a broken head, bleeding blood.
Give us some kind of an idea of how you got started. You were born of peasants. You were born in a rural part of China. Your mother was a beggar. And you have come a long way since then. But give us some kind of an idea of what your life was like in rural China.
Yes, you know, Hank, when the Chinese Communist Party is trying to portray its 100th birthday with a kind of a message of big economy, nuclear weapon, and the nearly 100 million party membership, we should remember that under this Communist Party's rule in the past 70 years in China, at minimum, I mean, this is the most conservative estimate by historians and objective scholars, that between 80 to 90 million Chinese citizens were killed, murdered, one way or another, by political campaigns, one after another, you know, first by Chairman Mao, and then, of course, now by this Chairman Xi Jinping. And my mother was a beggar because that was not her choice. She was married with her ex-husband, with my elder brother and sister, until the 1958 when Communist Party Chairman Mao launched this so-called Great Leap Forward. It's a totally insanity campaign to, you know, basically falsely claiming in within 3 years China's GDP will catch up with the United Kingdom, within 5 years will catch up with the United States of America. You know, 50 years later, they're still not catching up with America. But that was the time. They basically used the steel production, you know, iron steel production as the measure for GDP. So the whole nation, under this fanatic rule, basically gave up their ordinary work, especially in the rural areas. Farmers gave up their agriculture work, and everybody starting to make up a steel mill. And the people basically had to give all their anything made of steel, you know, their pot, the spoons, and anything made of steel had to be given back to their Communist Party. To every village has to have a steel mill to manufacture steels. And that's how the whole nation started the three-year so-called Great Starvation instead. So my mother's ex-husband could not really basically afford even a meal. I mean, there is nothing to eat, and there is no place to live. So he begged my mother with my elder brother, elder sister, to just go away from home. So my mother just put my brother on her shoulder and dragging the hands of my elder sister, just walking day after day, month after month, and year after year, village by village, begging food for survival. And my mother ate dirt, ate roots of the tree, and anything, I mean, basically, in order to survive. And that 3 years, at least 20-some million Chinese, I think it's even more, had starved to death. I mean, it's purely caused by this evil ideology, the political campaign of Chairman Mao. So that is what the Chinese peasant's life looked like until she begged into my village, met with my father, and they got married, and I was born. So poverty, not because of natural disaster, it's totally caused by evil ideology of communism. That basically has been plaguing my family, and my mother was infected with this lung disease and no money to heal, and until she died, basically, the freshman year of my college in 1987. And so the Communist Party create a false utopia. I mean, calling for so-called equality and even, you know, this fantasy, you know, there is no equality at all, and never have been from former Soviet Union to now the current Chinese Communist Party. Even among their own party leadership, rank and files, non-standing committee members in the Communist Party literally are ruling China, and actually only one. The rest of the 8 standing committee members of the Politburo of the Communist Party has to bow to Chairman Xi Jinping now. I mean, then the rest of the 25 so-called Politburo members of the Communist Party serve the Nan. So, or, you know, basically serve among them. So this is a structure very much like the Chinese imperial system, you know, when the emperor rules all. So that's why Xi Jinping get a nickname, Emperor Xi. And he actually successfully removed the constitutional term limit, unlike his two predecessors, who only served 2 terms, that means 10 years, and he removed that term limit, basically has become president for life right now.
You saw education as a way out of poverty. And as a result of becoming educated, you became a student, obviously, and you were a leader in the Tiananmen Square massacre that took place in 1989. Talk about how you saw an opportunity to try to do something about the massive corruption in the Chinese government. And later on, of course, you saw that you had massive corruption yourself as a result of meeting Jesus Christ.
You're right, Hank. I mean, we now in retrospect, knowing that the Lord's way is always higher than our way, his path is higher than our path. And so when I was from high school, basically because of the equality and injustice in my family, I was basically discovering, in the Communist Party in China, the best way is to become a Communist Party leader, you know, before you can really carry out your political dream to help others and help your own family. So, but then 1989, and during, you know, the students' movement started. At that time, you know, from a real communist, I became a little bit like a humanist. In order to get promotion in the Communist Party the normal way, I mean, even as a student leader, you know, before the Tiananmen Square movement started, I was serving as the vice president of the Students' Union and in the English department. So I have to really think how to, you know, bribe the party official in the English department in order to prepare a better future. And then, ironically, 1989 happened, the students' movement started. I felt, maybe this is the best time for me to partially build some personal capital for my political future. And partially, I was also really influenced by the Soviet Union, the reformer, you know, the party secretary, Mikhail Gorbachev, and with, his reform and openness slogan, I was attracted because compared to what the Communist Party was doing at the time, we think, this is total corruption. And all their sons and daughters, they are getting rich and had open corruption. And there's less and less freedom. So we basically, you know, went out and I led a group of our students to Tiananmen Square and occupied part of the Tiananmen Square and with the slogan of anti-corruption. And of course, you know, there was some self-righteousness because I thought I'm just a young man. You know, my biggest crime of corruption is, you know, spend $10 buy a piece of expensive cake to bribe my party secretary in the English department. The Communist Party leaders, you know, they are selling cars, they are making a lot of more money. But anyway, we participate in the students' movement, and little did we know or realize this bloody Communist Party would commit a massacre, you know. So I was in the Tiananmen Square until 3 days before the massacre happened, primarily because my then-girlfriend, and later on became my wife, and now we are 27 years of marriage already, and Heidi, so she was very sick for drinking unclean water at the square and sent to the hospital, so that spared me from one of the tankmen in the Tiananmen Square during the massacre 32 years ago on June 4th, 1989. So that was the time, basically, you know, it was a massacre. We would have never thought the so-called People's Liberation Army would be sent by the so-called People's Government and to kill its own people. You know, some of my friends, you know, lost, both legs were smashed by the tanks and directly striking them. And, many were killed as the world I witnessing, you know, on the TV live. So it was a tragic massacre, but many people was not really able to see that actually in God's providential way, his supernatural purpose actually was after this Tiananmen Square, the massacre actually had served as the single most important moment in history for the redemption of Chinese intellectual souls. I mean, you were talking about hundreds of thousands of Chinese students, professors, and young professionals came to Christ after the massacre. And I myself was one of them. I was regarded as the first generation of Christian in my college, and basically also with the help and influence of our American English teachers, who were actually secret missionaries. And it was during that time, yeah, when I was totally kind of disillusioned and even thinking to commit a suicide. And the Lord rescued me, and our missionary American teacher basically handed me a book. It was a biography of a Chinese pastor, and telling the story how the missionary from Hudson Taylor's group, China Inland Mission, was sharing the gospel to this Chinese intellectual who was dying at the time because of the addiction for opium in the early 1900s. Anyway, so he got saved, and not only God healed him from opium addiction, but God used him, setting up, you know, hundreds of opium prevention centers with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that story deeply touched my life, and basically I surrender my life and accept Jesus Christ as my Savior and Lord. So that is the story.
I think it's such an interesting juxtaposition between the actual physical Tiananmen Square, where you went because you hoped that there was a possibility that the government could reform, but then you had a spiritual Tiananmen Square moment as well. And you just described that, where Jesus Christ became Lord and Savior of your life, and that changed everything. In fact, you became what is humorously called God's double agent, because on the one hand, you were teaching English to Communist Chinese Party leaders, and on the other hand, you were training people in the principles of evangelism, church growth, and the transformation of the culture through Christianity.
That's right, Hank. It's like the full display of God's humor. You know, after I finished my graduate school in Beijing, and at that time, our students still had to be assigned a job, you know, within the government. So I got my job as a teacher teaching English in the Chinese Communist Party school in the city of Beijing, the capital city. So during the daytime, I was teaching English to the Communist Party leaders. And during the evening and the weekend, I was as busy as any full-time pastor evangelist, riding my bicycle in every corner of the university district in Beijing. Different universities, and then set up the underground church and Bible study groups, and later on established the underground training school, training for the Bible, evangelism, and mission preparation, until the Communist Party discovered it and arrested my wife and I by putting us into prison.
And after you got out of prison, you and your wife had the ultimate revenge against the Communist Chinese Party by actually getting pregnant.
That's right. You described it in a way that showing how, I mean, cruel in a sense, the Communist Party basically regard every woman's womb as their government property. From really high school to the age of giving birth, even after giving birth, so the Chinese Communist Party's Family Planning Commission, and from central government all the way to the village Family Planning Commission, in the name of the family planning, every woman's womb basically has become a state-owned property. They are being constantly inspected. They're subject to monthly and bi-monthly inspection. And the government, if they suspect you are pregnant without permission card, then you will be caught and get a forced abortion. When we talk about the biggest crime in 20th century committed by any political organization, certainly by the Chinese Communist Party. I think this is the one, the forced abortion, forced sterilization, certainly, I mean, top the number one. I don't think any other crime even can come to match this one, because even Communist Party leaders made their announcement in public setting, international arena. The Chinese Communist Party said, as a way of contributing to the climate change, like to avoid further climate change, with the family planning system, the Communist Party had successfully prevented over 300 million children from being born. I mean, Hank, 300 million, that's pretty much the population of America, right? So most of them were forcibly aborted from their mother's womb, from 4 months, 6 months, 8 months. I know 10 months old, some were even killed right after they were born, deliberately murdered. I mean, so you talk about crime against humanity, and you talk about how many parents, the fathers, mothers were suffering, continue to suffer as of today with this forced sterilization campaign. I mean, many wombs were left there permanently. So that's why, you know, when we were facing that situation, because we couldn't get a quota to get pregnant, even though after we got married legally for 3 years, we couldn't get a quota to have a legal pregnancy for a first child. And so, you know what, as you said, after we were both released from prison, and I call it in my book, our first wave of civil disobedience from our bedroom, and got pregnant, but we were facing, you know, very serious consequences. So that's prompted our fleeing out of the city of Beijing, and eventually, by the Lord's mercy and the miraculous doors opened, we got to the United States. I mean, got to the Hong Kong first. Before Hong Kong was handed over, we were granted refugee status to the United States.
And that story is quite a story in and of itself. I don't want to pass over the abortion or the forced abortion commentary too quickly, because I think that there is a very clear connection between these forced abortions and the suicide rate among Chinese women. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, Hank, I'm glad that you asked that question. You know, when these women, you know, the life is always the most precious thing, right? When you get pregnant and you really trying every way to protect your child. But in the end, in the Communist Party's side, they basically would subject for forced abortion, which means they would grab this pregnant woman and into the hospital, or even some cities would set up forced abortion clinic or bed on every corner of the street. Basically grab you and put you on the bed, abortion bed, and then restraining you, and then inject two doses of poison liquid into your stomach. I mean, basically kill the baby. And then, you know, they would sometimes make you pay for that procedure. And some few years ago, when Congressman Chris Smith, you know, who is the most staunching pro-life congressman in history, you know, serving in Congress 42 years, and he conducted a hearing on this. I mean, we even show a photo showing, you know, one lady, after her baby was forcibly aborted, induced birth, you know, for the, like, 8 months pregnancy. Those cruel, you know, the family planning official would, in order to make her pay for the procedure, would put this formed tissue, I mean, not tissue, formed a baby already, you know, kind of a full baby, dead, on the side of her bed. On the side of her bed. You know, what kind of a trauma? So that's why women, according to the U.S. Department of Women Trafficking, the office statistics, Chinese women has the world's highest suicidal rate. Also, China has become the world number one hub for women trafficking, because now the Chinese government has been harvesting the bitter result, because most of the aborted were girls, right? And so the gender imbalance, now every 116 boys match with the 100 or under girls. So you would have like 20, 30 million bachelors would never find a wife. So that's why the prostitution is prevalent. That's why the women trafficking from North Korea, Burma, and Vietnam, I mean, is so, so popular. I mean, the New York Times ran a big, big story and detailing some of the details by investigating this. So the consequence is huge. And of course, there will be economic consequences, because China rapidly has become an aging population. That's why, ironically, Hank, I don't know whether you have paid attention on this, like just a month ago, Communist Party changed its policy. And instead of one child per family, they are proposing to force women to have at least give birth to three children per family policy nowadays. So from forced abortion to control this population, now because they want to build the economy, prevent a real enduring disaster for their food problem or GDP problem, they are now going to force women to give birth.
The government production of children. So they've gone from a one-child policy to a two-child policy and now to three or more. Yeah.
Minimum three, they said.
Yeah. There's something else I wanted to touch on as well. You passed over this very quickly, and I don't know if you did this intentionally or not, because being in a Chinese prison is probably not a very wonderful thing to talk about. I know from reading your book that you got to know the same 30 people in the same 200 square foot location. So a very small location, a very small cell, relatively speaking, 30 people in that cell. And you were there for 2 months. And one of the things that came out of that, I noticed that you really don't dwell on what you went through during that period of time. You don't elaborate a whole lot on that, but it must have been a very difficult situation. But what you do elaborate on is the fact that you embraced a prison theology, something that you think that all of us should embrace in one way or another. Can you expand on that as well?
Yes, Hank. The prison theology is part of the persecuted church in China, I think in many other parts of the world. And I first learned about that actually after I was baptized by a pastor who spent over 12 years in prison for his faith. And then after I got married, the pastor Alan Yuan from Beijing, who married Heidi and I, spent over 22 years in imprisonment. So these pastors, as my spiritual mentors, kept telling me that, you know, Brother Fu, if you want to be a faithful servant of the Lord in China, the first theological course is called prison theology. So, you know, I was initially spiritualized that. And of course, I know they had spent so many years. I physically, in my heart, I was weak initially as a new Christian, you know, and I was a little scared, but I was prepared from that background. And because this pastor said that's the way the Lord revived his church in China. So I couldn't connect the link really until I myself was thrown into prison. I mean, the first 3 days and nights were just a nonstop interrogation. I mean, when I almost basically passed out because of the sleep deprivation, I mean, this interrogator just woke me up and kept telling me, knocking my head, and basically that this is the holy ground of the Communist Party and I need to confess. And then I was thrown into the prison cell, living with other 30 prisoners in a kind of a 20 square meter small cell, like a dumpling. You know, everyone only have a very small space, and if you go to in the midnight, if you use the bathroom, then you lose your space, and you have to just stand there, nowhere to sleep. So, but the Lord showed me firsthand how thirsty and hungry of these prisoners, literally by really the end of my second month before I was released, every prisoner in my prison cell has acknowledged me, treated me like their spiritual counselors. I mean, they were singing with me. I successfully transformed that prison cell into a choir room. And so every day we have to be sitting straight on the deck for 10, 12 hours. So what do you do? So I said Christian faith is a singing faith. So I start teaching them singing, give thanks to the Lord, basically, you know. And so every day, I mean, not only actually I found that my cell was able to sing, giving thanks to the Lord, and neighboring prison cells, whenever we started, they are able to sing the same thing. And maybe the prison, the whole prison column, as Paul said, you know, start giving thanks and praising the Lord. And of course, later on, the prison guards found that and used electric shock baton, tried to scare me, and said if I continue to sing with words and spreading the so-called, he said, superstitious words, then I will be tortured with the electric shock baton. So I went back to prison cell, and instead of using words, I just using like just humming the rhythm, you know. But the Lord is so faithful. I mean, you can see there is a spiritual revival. So I realized that is the essence of the prison theology. That's why Paul said, you know, preach the gospel in season and out of season. So the Lord was not just saying, okay, you, after you get 100 hours evangelism training, then go to the certain area for evangelism. And even in the Communist Party country, you will see Jesus has been winning. If we're out of prison, he has won, because there are so many Christians now in China, and even despite of the persecution. And inside the prison, we have prison theology. As long as you honor the Lordship of Christ everywhere, anywhere, and then his glory is in full display. And I had a first-hand account. I mean, you know, Hank, when Communist Party took power in 1949, after 1.5 centuries labor by foreign missionaries and the Chinese indigenous movement, and there was estimated less than 1 million Christians in China. But after 70 years of nonstop communist persecution, imprisonment, torture, martyrdom, today, according to the Purdue University, the estimate after very thorough research, they estimated conservatively the number of Chinese Christians should have already been reached to between 100 to 130 million. That's 100 to 130-fold growth instead of a decrease. So that is kind of also the humor of God, you know, that those Communist Party leaders think their policy would terminate God's church. But we know that for sure God had already promised, you know, even the hell, no power, no ruler, no demons, no angels would ever conquer or defeat God's church. And the truth will set them free. Yes.
Your theology actually was developed through prison theology, meaning that you learned firsthand that what happened in the book of Acts is happening in the 21st century. You learned about miracles because you experienced, you saw firsthand miracles. You learned about Pentecost because you saw an iteration of Pentecost taking place in China, the mighty rushing wind, and the kinds of things that you write about. is something that is very analogous that happened in the first century. So what's happening in the 21st century happened in the first century. What happened in the first century is happening in the 21st century. So your theology was formed in the crucible of prison.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is basically to the Chinese house church. They basically said they are just following the teaching and the word of the Lord in its own form. So that is not changing, you know, by time, you know, because we are serving the same God that Peter and Paul had served, the Justin Martyr had served, you know, Bonhoeffer had served, Martin Luther had served, Calvin had served. So, you know, God is not changed by, you know, different century, no matter how much theological the trend had evolved, but we serve the same God who is the same and remains the same yesterday, today, and forever. So for the Chinese church, you know, to read the book of Acts, they just follow that. And also the Lord actually make them see, experience that, you know, when you are faithful preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, miracles, wonders, do follow. And when you, persecution do happen too, but they rejoice in the persecution because knowing that as Paul and Silas, right, when they are in prison, they're seeing. They're seeing and they know their chain would be broken. They give thanks to the Lord for their opportunity in prison so that more souls in prison can be saved. So that is, now because of the new theology, the Western evolution theory, this kind of rationalism, enlightening movement of the atheists, and now in America, you have socialism, communism, unfortunately, now are resurrecting. So people are kind of becoming hard-hearted. You know, their hearts are hardened. And they would not really believe the miracles anymore. And they want to use reason and only reason. But fortunately, God is not just a God, just deducted by reason alone, although our faith is a reasonable faith, you know, with the presupposition that, you know, God's power existence is visible through his creation, conscience, and of course, his son, Jesus Christ, and his incarnated word. So basically, that is, I think, it's very, in a sense, it's very natural. So the Chinese Christians in the persecuted church, they're not to like treat themselves as a very peculiar, very super spiritual. To them, you just follow whatever the scripture is teaching us and do what God has asked us to do, and he will take all the responsibilities.
And he certainly did for you as you escaped on the last working day of the old Hong Kong government. So you escaped through Hong Kong into the free world. And that in itself is a story worth telling because it involves the miraculous.
It is, Hank. That itself is full of miracles and grace. I mean, we kind of fled out of China through Thailand and into Hong Kong. You know, Heidi was pregnant. We couldn't tell. She has to pretend not until we reached Hong Kong. Then we were hidden by an American missionary, my mentor, Dr. Jonathan Chow. So you may have met with him or heard about him, the pioneer of the modern mission to China from the West. So then as Hong Kong's returning to China, the clock is ticking, the countdown is reaching. We were like, when are we going to be resettled as refugees to another country? But the Lord, you know, opened the door at the last minute, 3 days before Hong Kong was turned over to China. God even used Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, directly and issued an order, and we were accepted as refugees to the United States of America without going through the United Nations refugee filter process. So that is truly a miracle.
And then you founded China Aid. I want you to talk a lot about China Aid, the significance of the Underground Railroad. What you are doing today is very, very significant in terms of helping persecuted Christians. And I think it's worth noting for our audience that 4 out of 5 people who are persecuted in the world, and there may be some 300 million persecuted people, 4 out of 5 of those are Christians. You are doing something about the persecuted church in China. And as I said, China's Underground Railroad is a big part of that.
Well, thank you, Hank. I was originally studying at Westminster Theological Seminary immediately after we came to the U.S. And I had never thought I would establish an NGO, a nonprofit organization by myself, because I was preparing myself as a missionary theologian, basically feel the Lord's calling for me to receive the best theological education so that I can be equipped thoroughly to train the trainers for the graduate level of the Chinese house church leaders and teachers, and that, you know, the Lord, again, has a better idea than we can plan for ourselves. And so during these years in Philadelphia, I constantly received phone calls from our persecuted brothers and sisters in China. I mean, at that time, back to the 1990s, they still have people using fax machines, right? And letters. And so I just got all kinds of message, and sometimes even live, I heard from our brother or sister in Christ said, "Oh, Brother Fu, they are coming. They are knocking on the door." I could literally heard the public security bureau officers and agents broke into the door and start confiscating, yelling at these Christian house churches. And they basically asked me to pray for them and to help them in any way. I mean, sometimes really midnight is China's daytime, and even the White House has shut down, right? So what can we do? I just, the Lord, I know these Bible verses said, remember those who are in prison as if we are fellow prisoners, Hebrews 13:3. And I know, especially, when Jesus said, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm naked, I'm imprisoned, and a piece of bread, a cup of water, a piece of clothes, and the last one is more difficult, visit me in prison. You know, how can I, visit my brothers and sisters in prison when I'm a refugee in the United States? I mean, that's how started this organization, basically feeling, well, at least I can be a voice for those voiceless brothers and sisters. At least if, America is the most powerful free world country, with the value, Lord forbid, this now there's some challenges, right? The First Amendment, these religious freedom values. We just actually finished a 3-day International Religious Freedom Summit with the largest gathering ever in Washington, D.C., bringing from many, many countries, the organizations, advocacy, and also victims of religious persecution from different faith traditions this week. And so that, at least we can speak for them, and we can also help them. We can just save one cup of coffee. It would feed, a family prisoner, their children, for a day or maybe 2 days. And then if their life is in danger, we should go and rescue them. Just like the Underground Railroad. And if we have the best theological knowledge, there are more Bibles, in America household, I think, than the rest of the world combined, all kinds of versions, right? But yet our brothers and sisters are still hungry for the basic biblical education, Christian worldview, and rule of law training. So that's what in China Aid we later on developed into a 3E mission. So China Aid was established with the mission to advance religious freedom and the rule of law in China for all by exposing the abuses by encouraging the abuse, by equipping the leaders. So basically that's the three E: expose, encourage, and equip.
Let me say something really quickly before we go on, and that is your book, God's Double Agent. It's the true story of a Chinese Christian's fight for freedom. The Chinese Christian we're talking about, of course, is Bob Fu. He is the author. This book, available for anyone who stands shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. All you have to do is go to the web at equip.org. You can order your copy just for your support of the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. This is one of those books that I'm very passionate about. It's the kind of book that you can't put down. I started reading it again, it's probably a second or a third time, just yesterday. And I didn't put it down again until early this morning. I finished the last page. This is a gripping story, but I think it's also something that will motivate people to want to use their life for an eternal perspective. Again, the book is titled God's Double Agent. You get your copy on the web at equip.org, or you can write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Bob, I think you are probably the best person to ask the following question, and that is the difference between China when you were growing up and China today. I mean, we're looking at a time during your growth within the culture of China to a time where you are now in America, and it seems as though we have gone in China from the control of Christianity to the eradication of Christianity. And I say that having spent a lot of time in China myself. I mean, the last time I was in China, not all that long ago, you could still meet with Christians in the hotel lobby. You could still meet in house churches around Shanghai or Beijing or Nanjing or other parts of China. Today, all of that seems to be repressed. It seems like the persecution against Christians is leading to that word eradication, but that's the goal. The reality is, as you say, through persecution, the Christian church keeps growing.
Yes, thank you, Hank, for asking that question. You know, after Chairman Mao's Cultural Revolution, when the then senior leader Deng Xiaoping took power, he basically realized that Christianity and Christians cannot be destroyed or eradicated through administrative political campaigns like a Cultural Revolution. And Chairman Mao failed miserably. And even during the Cultural Revolution, no religion is even allowed to exist. Even the government-sanctioned churches would not be allowed to exist. And so that's why they restarted this so-called three-self patriotic moment. Basically, the government-controlled, registered the church moment. And, you know, so that was the time, I mean, all the way until about maybe 8 years ago or something, or 9 years ago, that I think when you were there, I mean, you saw that the policy, even sometimes executed a little bit heavier, sometimes a little softer, persecution did not stop, but at least, you know, in some areas, depending on the government officials, the policy implementation, religious policy implementation is also not the same degree. So that's why, you know, in one area, even the house church, the independent churches were able to operate pretty much above the ground, such as in the city of Wenzhou, a coastal city called the Jerusalem of China. And where the house churches, the independent unregistered house churches, were able to even at least competing with the government sanctioned churches. But in other areas like West China, in rural areas, in Xinjiang, Tibet, they would have more restrictions. But in the city, in some cities, some churches have more freedom than that of other cities. So there are a lot of variations in the past 30 years before this new president, Xi Jinping, took power. So there's a dramatic turn, especially in the last few years, really in the name of so-called sinicization, which basically means you have to make change your religion to be compatible with the socialism, communism ideology. Otherwise, you will be destroyed. So this is the first, really, I think in some 40 years, the new cultural revolution is now becoming apparent. The Communist Party leaders, it's almost like now the Nazi Germany time. I mean, they would force the churches to remove and burn, destroy, taking down all the crosses from the rooftop of the church building. Otherwise, the pastors would face imprisonment. I mean, this is not house church. The government-sanctioned church, pastors sentenced to 10 years, 12 years, 14 years imprisonment for simply refusing to take down the crosses of thousands of churches. And you would see that the pastor like Pastor Wang Yi from Early Rain Covenant Church in West China was sentenced to 9 years on Christmas Day 2019 for preaching a sermon basically by citing John 3:16, calling President Xi to repent and offering salvation for him. That's called the subversion of state power, 9 years. And my good old friend, Pastor John Cao, CAO, was sentenced to 7 years for what? He's a Chinese American. He has a Caucasian American wife, Jimmy Powell from North Carolina, with two children, all born in the U.S. I mean, he was sentenced to 7 years imprisonment for what? For basically setting up 16 schools, 16 or 17 schools for 2,000 children who would otherwise have any opportunity to receive an education at all in the Chinese-Burma border areas on the Burma side, even not in China side. The Chinese Communist Party took him and sentenced him to 7 years. And you have other, you know, female pastors, female teachers in the house church. They would receive like 8 years, 10 years, 14 years being accused as evil cult members. The evidence the prosecutor showed in the court, this is in written form. I mean, said, we found during the investigation and reading their homes, the government found evil cult books such as The Pilgrim's Progress, such as John Calvin's Institute of Christian Religion, such as the devotional book called The Streams in the Desert. I mean, these are called evil cult books. So, I mean, if you just polling an ordinary American church, and how many of them had read or have a copy of these books, many of them. I mean, so according to this definition, most of the American churches would be subject as evil cult, and the leaders would sentence to many, many years imprisonment. So right now, the church has entered into a real winter. I mean, not only the Communist Party continues a harsh crackdown that we have not seen in 40 years, but also they launched the war against the children. I mean, no children under 18 years old, and no students, no Communist Party member, and no Youth League member is even allowed to enter into the church building. Millions of Chinese Christian children were forced to even sign a form, a Communist Party prepared form, to deny and denounce their faith. We have seen so many these forms all over China. And not only children, but also even the medical professionals, doctors, nurses, they are totally forbidden to have Christian faith. So this is a huge moment. I mean, it's a huge campaign, I think, with the aim to eradicate Christian faith. I mean, you are an apologist, and the Communist Party, in the name of sinicization, had developed a 10-year plan to retranslate the Bible so that the Bible new translation would be compatible with the socialism, communism teaching. Tell me, Hank, you know, with your encyclopedia of you know, cults or, you know, Christian faiths. I mean, how can you reconcile and make any Orthodox Christian faith compatible with socialism and communism, atheism? That's a self-contradiction, right? But they are doing that.
They're doing that. And what is interesting, you mentioned Nazi Germany. China has the capacity to create a police state that exceeds Nazi Germany because of things like face recognition technology. So there's a way now, there's a mechanism by which you can control the population, even if you have a population of 1.4 billion people. This is something that is in many ways terrifying, because I know, Bob, years ago I met with the director of the State Administration of Religious Affairs in Beijing.
Yes, you went.
And the story or the narrative that I came away with is that you have a small communist party trying to control a large mass of people. And so obviously what they want to do is keep stasis among the religions so one religion doesn't become so much larger than others and creates imbalance and therefore becomes a lever to destroy the control of the Communist Chinese Party. That was the narrative that I came away with. But today you have a completely different situation. You have a situation where you can control people in virtually every dimension of their lives because now you have the lever of technology.
Absolutely. You catch a very modern, scary, kind of high-tech way, moment. It's basically, you can summarize it as a digital authoritarianism, right? So we enter into a digital age, and what has been developed, now the Chinese Communist Party has installed, or about to reach that number, is 2.6 billion face recognition cameras installed in every corner of China. Basically, every Chinese will have at least two face recognition cameras following them from traffic light back to their community on the door of their home. 2.6 billion. So the Chinese population is 1.3. And also the Communist Party used this to develop a social credit system. Like when a Christian is being readed when they are in the church, and then that record would automatically be reflected on your social credit score. So you would have difficulty even to buy a subway ticket, to renew your membership, to even buy an airplane. There are like some 10 million or so already on that blacklist who are banning from flying, you know, from buying an airline ticket. So the horrifying thing is today in West China, you know, the U.S. government, Secretary Pompeo, already designated as a genocide, crime against humanity. The Chinese Communist Party has established over 380 camps, the modern concentration camps, with between 1 to 3 million primarily ethnic minority groups such as Uyghurs, Kazakhs, with both, you know, predominantly, of course, Muslims and Christians are being locked in there. And they are under 24/7 digital surveillance in the camps. And they are being forced to do hard labor and brainwash, and the government customized special earphone that they have to wear 10 hours a day, basically listening to all the propaganda by President Xi Jinping and the Communist Party. Some already really went into insanity. You know, this is, and also children camps as well. So in the city of Urumqi, the capital city of Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, basically every 5 meters there is a checking point. So there's a group of digital cameras following you. The reason I said that is that we rescued a student who was imprisoned, and then after our advocacy, she was released and came back and reported to us. And she came back and said, oh, you know, after she was released from the concentration camp and back home, she's still not allowed to come back to the U.S. She's a U.S. permanent resident. Her mother is an American citizen. And she was put on in her neighborhood, basically living with her biological father's new family. And she was constrained, basically warned not to walk out of her neighborhood. So one day she even put a kind of a veil wrapping up her face, and she just walked to a neighboring street. As soon as she crossed the street, just walking a few meters, a strong man just put his hands on her shoulder and dragged her to the police station and said, "We have you served in prison, or, you know, and we saw you, we recognize you." Also, there is another horrifying practice, is the organ harvesting. So that's another topic that is still going on. They would harvest organs from living human beings.
One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, Bob, is you mentioned this great explosion of Christianity in the midst of persecution, so that there are now some 100 million Christians in China, some say as many as 130 million, as you pointed out earlier.
Yes.
But many of those Christians are subjugated to a communist kind of Christianity. In other words, they're not part of the house church movement, rather they're part of the three self church. I want to get a little bit of a perspective from you in terms of how you see the three self church as opposed to the house church movement. The difference is, if you look at a three self movement church, part of the patriotic movement supposedly in China, is that controlled ostensibly by communist Chinese leaders?
Yes, absolutely. Let me answer you with the illustration. You know, in the book of Ephesians, Jesus described the church as his bride, right? It's like a married couple. So the difference between the house church and so-called three self is like, you know, this is that the house church is trying every way to be a faithful bride with only one husband, that is Jesus Christ alone. But the government-controlled three-self church, they are imposed willingly or unwillingly with a new husband or second husband, and basically it's an adulterous marriage if they still try to honor Jesus Christ at all. So some of the believers, undoubtedly, who chose to go to the Three Self Church are, you know, saved Christians, but compromised. And I think this new movement served as a testing time, because Xi Jinping started even testing the government-sanctioned churches. So many government-sanctioned churches start receiving the order that you either really honor Xi Jinping on the pulpit by singing Communist Party revolutionary songs and put a portrait of Xi Jinping on your pulpit and waving Communist Party flag in your church, or you will be destroyed. So that's a testing time, showing really now that many Chinese church are the government sanctioned churches, actually after this new wave of purification by the Chinese Communist Party in his persecution form, many of them were disbanded, destroyed, and many of the believers finally had a wake-up call. They realized that they can't rely really anti-Christ Communist Party political organization for safety, for protection, for legalization, because once you depend on this husband by committing adultery, and then he wants to own you. He wants to kick out Jesus Christ from the picture, or make it a fake Jesus, like a so-called sanitization. So you can't really worship the Lord as a real Lord at all. I think that is the fundamental difference. When in 1994, I remembered when I was in the Three Self Church in Beijing, that's the incident prompted me actually start the establishing house church in Beijing. And that one Sunday, that three self-church pastor who's 70-some years old because he's secretly baptizing so many students under 18 years old or even college students, discipleship, working with the South Korean missionaries. The government funded, and at that time they didn't arrest him. They basically on Sunday declared his forced retirement. But to our surprise, the pastor on Sunday night escaped from his kind of house monitoring system. He went to the church corridor and waited on the backstage. So when the government made the announcement, he walked onto the stage from the back and he stunned the whole congregation. And then with the thousands of eyes watching, the Chinese security forcefully took over the microphone and basically pushed him out. His wife was pushed down, had a heart attack. I was there that day, and we quickly brought his wife, tried to get a taxi outside the church to go to the emergency room. But no taxis even allowed. We called the China's 911. But as soon as they heard it's from this called Gangwashi Church, they immediately hung up. So we later learned that the 500, the Chinese plainclothes military police were installed in that first 10 kind of columns, in the 10 benches in the church building. The communist government was ready to have a bloody massacre. I mean, crackdown that morning, if any believers were found like rebellious or tried to argue with them. So two of them were arrested just because they tried to calm down the government agents not to hurt the pastor's wife. And so that morning I saw Caesar replaced God on the church platform, on the pulpit. I mean, Caesar at least declares, wants to be God. They want to control who to preach, what to preach, when to preach, and the content. Now, the sinicization is basically a new attempt, try to change your faith with the ultimate purpose to destroy your faith.
How interested is the Chinese government in silencing your voice? I mean, here you're a person that knows intimately what's going on in China. You're seeking to do something about it. How big a threat are you? And I also, in asking that question, want to talk about the changing context within the United States of America, because when you started China Aid, you had presidents of the United States were very interested in religious freedom. They were interested in what was happening to persecuted Christians. And now the context seems to be changing. And not only that, but you have great economic forces that would love to silence people like you, because just like the NBA and other major institutions, China is a huge market for them.
Yes, Hank. I mean, we live in a dramatic different time. Back to President Bush's time, certainly, he has been very, very vocal on advancing religious freedom. And he told me, personally, in private, basically said that he purposely every time schedule his time visiting China by crossing a Saturday, Sunday, so that he can go to a church. And at his last visit, he was even asking me to arrange a prayer meeting with some house church leaders. It almost happened till the last moment. The president, Hu Jintao, at the time, basically vetoed that. So for that, President Bush said that he would, never go to China. I mean, basically after he was retired from the Oval Office, despite of multiple invitations with, millions of dollars of speaking fees, he said they wouldn't even allow me to have a prayer meeting. We already set that off. I mean, the prayer meeting was supposed even to happen in the government-sanctioned church kind of office. and the National Security Council, Bush's advance team, they all working with me basically set that up. And he also spoken loudly. And then during the President Obama's time, religious freedom became really the bottom line of, even among the liberal leftist NGO organizations would admit that. And then, of course, during the President Trump's time, he has become the most vocal supporter of religious freedom. Not only just speaking, he became the first president even set up an annual ministerial for international religious freedom in the State Department, chaired by Pompeo, Vice President Pence, and invited me and some leaders to his office. And President Trump, even in the Oval Office, met with the survivors of religious persecution. And what a sea change in comparison. This week we had this world's largest religious freedom gathering with the former ambassador on religious freedom in the State Department, Sam Brownback, and a Democrat NGO leader, Dr. Katrina Lantos-Sweat, who's the daughter of the late Congressman Tom Lantos, the only Jewish Holocaust survivor serving in the Congress. And they both, jointly made appeal to President Biden to at least to just offer a meeting with these victims from concentration camps, survivors of the concentration camp. Like my family we rescued, the mother spent 15 months in concentration camp. And I witnessing firsthand the forced prostitution, gang rape systematically in the concentration camp. And nope, it was just denied plainly. And neither the vice president nor even the Secretary of State Blinken, nor Speaker Pelosi, none of them showed up in person. Some of them, like Blinken, Pelosi, did record a video. So that is kind of, to them, maybe a great contribution. But this is a very worrisome thing. So the Communist Party of China is observing. They know they can't mess up with Trump, but now they are emboldened. I think they're lecturing the Americans in Alaska. You saw that moment when the Chinese foreign minister was pointing finger, lectured the U.S. Secretary of State and National Security Advisor on the same table. And, this is serious, but at least I see a very big bipartisan effort in Congress are still wanting to advance religious freedom. And partially, Hank, you touched on the enormous lobbyist business interest in China by the American greedy corporations. Congressman Wolf was attended one of our events this week, and he basically said, during the Reagan time, only like one law firm tried to lobby, signed a contract in Washington, D.C. to lobby for former Soviet Union. After President Reagan publicly shamed them and, shut it down, and that firm immediately shuttered that contract. No lobbyist would represent former Soviet Union. But today in this Washington, D.C., the capital city, you can find lobbyists from both Democrats and Republicans. High level former Speaker Don Banner is representing lobbyists for China's surveillance companies, and former Vice President candidate Senator Joe Lieberman, a Jew, would represent ZTE, these telecommunication companies who were found violent the U.S. sanction against Iran. Who is the largest enemy to Iran? It's Israel. So you have lobbyists are filled everywhere in this town. They're taking money from China. Their universities are building the Confucius Institute, inviting the Chinese spying operators into our university campus simply, because they are paid by the Communist Party as a free deal. and you have the penetrations of the Chinese spies everywhere, really. I mean, you have even my own home. Last year, we were exiled from our own home for 2 months with the help of the FBI and local law enforcement after we had a Chinese Communist Party invasion into our neighborhood. Every day between 10, 20 to 80, 90 communist so-called protesters occupied our street in front of our house, basically holding a banner and everyone from 9 to 4 and shouting cursing slogans and trying to, they called an eradication campaign, try to remove and kill me. And so that is happening in our own society. So the Communist Party from China, their spies, their aggressors are operating very actively, visibly in our own cities, in our own townships. So the NBA and Hollywood, NBA organizations, all these lobbyist greedy corporations, just simply for their own dollar's sake, and they basically are selling out their souls, unfortunately. That's the reality, sadly.
That is the reality. Are you more concerned about Christianity in the West or Christianity in the East? In other words, persecution in China has not eradicated the church. It's actually spurred the growth of the church. On the other hand, you have an anemic church in Western civilization that is very willing to capitulate to many of the forces that are leading us towards communism, leading us towards the destruction of a civilization that was the greatest mission-sending force in the history of the world. So you have two different things going on. You have the persecution of the Chinese Christians and a growing church in China. On the other hand, in the West, you have apathy, apathetic Christians who are more interested in their own comfort than they are in the perpetuation of the faith once for all delivered to the saints.
Oh, absolutely, Hank. I just give you a quote I just received during a conversation from a persecuted Christian in Beijing. Her husband has suffered tremendous torture just simply because of being a Christian human rights lawyer. And she said, we, the Chinese Christians, we are not afraid of persecution. What we are afraid most is the loathing, the spirit of the fear of the Lord and the presence of the Lord. So I paraphrase that in English. Basically, you know, that is happening in the West. I just feel, you know, as Billy Graham once said, that maybe the largest atheist group, not outside the church, is inside the church. I think you can practice your rituals. You can even faithfully attending a church service. But if your heart is not really honoring Christ as your Lord, not only in the church building for 45 minutes, but 24/7, and not only in the building, but everywhere you go, not only private, but in public, I think that is the biggest fear. The church has been losing the flavor of salt. And if you don't have light, then how can we be a city on the hill and a light in the darkness? So that is the most tragic. I mean, I think, of course, you know, the leftists, the liberal, they are very aggressive. They now have the raw power in all kinds of ways, Congress, executive branches, even judges. And but we're not launching a war against, you know, flesh and blood. It's a spiritual war. And if we lose the Lord prescribed our spiritual war uniforms, how can we expect we will win the war? Ultimately, you know, Christ has won the war, but, you know, this Western Christianity always talk about cultural wars. And if we have the same level of divorce rate and the same level of domestic abuse, same degree of, you know, holder of kind of pornography in the church as in outside the church, we lost the light and salt. I mean, we lost our witness because of less, we are not afraid of fear of the Lord anymore. And I think that is already reflected in our American culture. I have been in the U.S. since 1997, so this is the 24th year. And I say even in the past 20 years, actually even in the past 2 years, the kind of dramatic change of American culture, I mean, is very scary. So maybe the Lord tried to use this time to challenge our faith. Some will be tested and become stronger. Some will fall. I think maybe that is the good intention of the Lord by this new wave of discrimination, at least, and some even church pastors arrested for opening churches during the COVID, and they wouldn't arrest anybody who goes to the bar, go to Walmart, I mean, like go to a gambling station as an essential business of opening. So that's kind of, maybe we have to think about that. We have to be prepared, maybe some of the good lessons we can learn from the persecuted church. And I mean, persecuted church is not a just a perfect church like any institutional churches, but the spirit of it is to honor Christ and Christ alone, only Him as the head of the church, as the Lord of everything in our life. I think that is the key for the presence of the Lord.
I'm really interested in your perspective on the youth in America, particularly with respect to communism or socialism. And your perspective, I think, is poignant and profound given your early life. How do you feel about this growing support for communism among the young people? It seems as though people don't know history. Particularly the young people don't know history anymore, and therefore they're resigned to repeat it.
Well, that's one of the saddest things, I think, in a very kind of pessimistic way, I finally realized the consequence of cultural withdrawalism and from the different fields, especially in the academic field. We allow those academics, you know, from almost all the university, now even some Christian university in name only, they have become anti-Christ ideology training center. Our whole generation, I mean, our younger generation's children, I mean, they have been subject under a systematic brainwash, you know, basically because of this. I mean, so they were converted to this radical socialism and now communism. I mean, this is just a fruit. I think in the past few years, we see the fruit is being born, revealed after years for this deliberate brainwash and propaganda. On the other hand, I think, you know, anything that is not compatible with a holistic Christian worldview will be in self-destruction or in conflict. So these so-called liberals, these communists, Antifa, or you know, anyone who are doing rioting, I always said, if you do love communism or socialism, just immigrant or chose to go to South Korea, go to China, Venezuela for 2 years or 1 year, you may experience a little bit what does it look like. So they're taking advantage of the very freedom and by destroying this freedom and make this country as a semi kind of now almost a very sad, radical, leftist-driven country, at least now those in power. And I think they are being driven that way. So I felt very, very sad. But we know and believe Christ is still a sovereign Lord, and our Lord still control, right, Hank? So thank you. Thank you for your interview today. I really appreciate for giving me the opportunity.
Well, you are entirely welcome, and I'm certainly just grateful for the work that you're doing through China Aid, for your testimony, for being an example of someone that has an eternal perspective, that ultimately this life is temporary, eternity is forever. And so the story that you tell in your book is a story that people need to know about. It is a book that you will read from cover to cover. If you get this book, it is available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute, titled God's Double Agent by my guest Bob Fu. Again, if you stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth, we'll send you a copy. Check it out on the web at equip.org or write me at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Bob, thank you again so very much for the work that you are doing and the impact you have had on the lives of so many people throughout the world. You are making a difference for time and for eternity.
Thank you, Hank. It's my honor and my pleasure to share this with our brothers and sisters. The Lord bless you, your family, and continue to bless America.
Thank you, and thank all of you for tuning into this edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Look forward to seeing you next time with more of the podcast.